en colloque. Broadcasted by Canal Academy.
The third symposium on brain research was organized last November by the French-Israeli Neurosciences Association, better known as YAFIRN. Some of the best neuroscientists of both countries had accepted to join in. In 2006, the neuroscientists had focused on memory, on all kinds of diseases having consequences on memory. In 2007, the scope was widened, as the conferences had to do with brain research and the understanding of the conscious and the creative brain. A true challenge indeed. A few words about the YAFIRN to start with. It was founded in 2003 by Jean-Claude Picard, who still presides over the association. So what was the actual objective? Well, at that time, Israeli universities were threatened by European authorities to lose subsidies for geopolitics concerns. No matter what political debates might arise, Jean-Claude Picard was adamant it was crucial to enhance cooperation between French and Israeli neuroscientists. The symposium itself, to sum it up, it has been existing for 3 years and it's becoming more and more successful. We suggest to those who can speak French to listen to the first part of this symposium with speeches in French of Jean-Claude Picard and the French scientist Jean-Pierre Changeux. In this broadcast, you can listen to Eden Segaf making a brilliant speech on the future of brain research touching the mysterious. Eden Segaf is a famous Israeli neuroscientist, is head of the Interdisciplinary Center for Neural Computation located within the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Eden Segaf and his team are working hand in hand with international teams, leading to great progress in research. We are pleased to introduce you with Eden Segaf.
I'd like to start by thanking the organizers, especially Jean-Claude Picard, who did a lot of work here. You can't imagine how much work one needs in order to get this operation working. It's really fantastic. Jean-Claude and Yoram Cohen, it's not an easy job to organize such an operation, both in the morning and in the evening. And I would like especially to thank Lily Safra, who in some sense I see her as my teacher of perfection. I learned from her along the years, knowing her for 5 years now, that when one does something, he should be doing excellent. And we are as scientists trying to do excellent and perfect. So thank you, Lily, for teaching me this kind of a goal of perfection. Scientists should be perfect. So. And I'd like also to thank the audience here, which is growing every year. I see it as a success of this event, and I see it as a success of us scientists. Usually we do not like to move from our lab and talk to other the audience, but I think this is our role in many ways. What we do is supported by you, and what we do will affect you. I think we should interact, and I see this event as something very, very important. I think it's a model of how two countries, scientists in two countries, can interact to share knowledge with you. So thank you for coming, and of course the scientists who agreed to come without pressure, they agreed to come, thank them as well. So today I would like to touch and actually share with you what I see as a huge development, very fast development in brain research, especially in certain technologies that I would like to discuss today, that really, I think, will bring us much, much closer to understanding how this fantastic machine, as you heard before, is built from 10 billion nerve cells, is operating. So I would like to speak about technologies in the beginning, but before putting the brain into some context, then to talk about the new technologies that I think now emerging and that will help us, as I said, to really understand much, much better this specific machine, this specific technology that we have in our brain. I would like also then to discuss a little bit models of the brain, how do we go about trying to understand the machine and convince you that without the modeling such a complicated machine, we won't understand the machine. We just describe the machine, but we won't understand it. And eventually, I would like maybe to discuss a few more questions. Some of you will hear it today, but consciousness is certainly something that neuroscientists only recently started to discuss. Creativity is another thing, the question of free will, how a physical system like us, and that's what we have, physical system, generates what we feel is free will, and what is making a difference between me and Einstein, for example. So let's see what can I do. I just want to put us in a context. So we have big brains. As you know, our brain started small, and in the last several million of years, it became from rat to human. You saw it before. Today we have a huge brain relative to our body, 1.3 kilograms or so. And this brain is what is doing everything. Science, love, emotions, happiness, sorrow, whatever you want is hiding there. And I think we need to understand that, as you clearly understand, we have to understand it. We cannot survive without understanding it. I think it's essential to understand it. So here, that's why we are here, to try to understand it. And understanding it means, in my mind, eventually to model it. We'll discuss that later. So here we are, some millions years ago, 2 million years ago, 3 million years ago, we were like this. And then there is this fantastic jump, both in the artifacts we generated about 1.5 million years ago. We started to generate sophisticated tools. Until recently, we started to generate computers, cell phones. It all happened here in this period. But this is a very special period because in the last 60,000 years or so, there is a huge advance, not because the brain has changed, but because the way we use the brain has changed, and we became in many ways conscious to what we do. So I think, and I don't want to discuss it, and you have an expert, Jean-Pierre Changeau is an expert on art, and we discussed it at some point at length in Israel. So about 60,000 years ago, and this is only 20,000 years ago, in Lascaux, we started to see art, the generation of art. I cannot see a creature generating an art without being conscious to the processes that are going on in his own brain. So you have to image something, let's say a bison. Then you image a bison, you go to the cave of Lascaux in the dark, and you start to draw what you have in your mind. So the capability to image something that is not there and be aware, be conscious of the image, I think it's a new phenomena which makes us human. Then we started to write languages, then we started to have agriculture, then we started to have science about 3,000 years ago, then we started to have neuroscience, which is really new. Neuroscience is about 100 years ago. If I can set a point, as Changeau mentioned, if I can set a point, this is the point where new neuroscience started. About 100 years ago, two great anatomists, Ramon y Cajal, you heard about him before, the Spaniard, and Camillo Golgi, the Italian, started to do systematic anatomical work on the brain. When I say systematic, I mean that they have, actually, Golgi in Pavia, Italy, developed these new stains of the brain, whereby you put a specific stain, some of the cells, very minor percentage of the cells, get stained dark, not everything, so the brain does not become completely dark, but only some of the cells become dark. Then you can reconstruct the cells, you can draw the cells. As Ramon y Cajal was a fantastic artist, he wanted to be an artist. He also was a boxer and a womanizer. He had many knowledges, but I'm not going to talk about all these today, only about his artistic knowledge or capabilities to draw neurons. And because he drew neurons so well all over the body, from the cortex to the cerebellum, to the spinal cord, to the retina, we know a lot about the anatomy of the brain since then. So this is 100 years of knowledge of brain anatomy. But the problem was that they, until very recently, succeeded to stain only a very small, as I said, maybe less than 1% of the cell in the brain. So we don't really see the network. We infer the network from what we saw anatomically, because anatomy didn't give us the whole picture. And now, and that's what I want to share with you, I think there are two fantastic new technologies thus in the last year or so that really come forward in terms of our anatomical understanding of the brain. I'm only speaking about the anatomy, not yet the function. So there is the electron microscope development from the mid-20th century, but recently there is a new technology whereby you can use the EM, the electron microscope, to reconstruct fully everything that is in this piece of a brain. I want to discuss this in a second. I'll discuss this another new technology, which is genetic probes, whereby genetically you can stain an animal while it is born, and then it glows with different colors because different cells are stained with different colors. And then I want to discuss a fantastic new technology, which is actually now 5 years ago, old or so, the two-photon microscope. So let's start with the electron microscope technology. So you take a block of a brain. So this is a block of a fixed tissue of the brain. And you start to slice it very thin slices, one after the other, one after the other, one after the other. So this is one slice. And you start to slice another one and another one and reconstruct a whole piece of one nerve cell, then a whole piece of another nerve cell. This is a project done in Heidelberg by Wilfried Denk and with a mathematician, a student of Chaim Sompolinski here, who is now in MIT, Sebastian Sung, both of them working together, the anatomist, the technology, with a mathematician, developed this fantastic EM reconstruction of a whole piece of a brain. It's amazing because you can do today the following. You can really take a whole piece of a brain, one by one, reconstruct everything step by step, several thousand of pieces, put them together anatomically and see the whole piece of a brain, completely. There is not one cell missing. Not only that, but you can see the connections between the cells. So it's not only the structure of the cells themselves, but who is talking to who is connected to who, completely. Not one missing synapse, not one missing cell. So it's a whole new regime of new anatomy. It's a modern anatomy, which just developed in the last 2 years. We are starting to get a full picture, anatomical picture, of the brain. This is, I think, a fantastic development, because we shall really know now the wires in the brain, where are they connected, how many connections do I do as one cell to all other cells that I'm connected to, and so forth. This is one technology I would like you to remember, EM, electron microscope reconstruction, fully of a piece of a brain. It's completely new. The other technology, which is really fantastic, is what is called the brainbow technology. Not rainbow, but brainbow. Why brainbow? This is a group from Harvard University, Lichtman et al., where they stain genetically specific genes, and I'm not going to get into the technology now, but just the principle. So specific genes are being stained in birth, before birth. Specific genes are being stained, and then they go interact with each other, and these genes code for different type of cells. So one cell will become red. While the animal is alive and moving, the cells will become stained, in vivo, as we call it. And it looks like this. This is a real piece of a brain of these mice in this case, and this mice is now psychedelic mice, because inside its brain, there are these fluorescent dyes, about 100 dyes, a paleta of dyes that stain its cells. So unlike what you had to do before, which you reconstruct from a dark piece of a brain, here the brain is already stained with colors. And this is how it looks. It's really amazing because you see this one cell, for example, is blue, and another cell is red, and another cell is, green, another cell is red, and so forth. And the whole piece of the tissue is now stained, but it makes much easier our life to reconstruct it because you know now this is the green cell. Where does the green cell touch the red cell? So it's already stained a priori. These are pieces of the hippocampus, for example. Beautiful, beautiful staining. So it's not only very artistic, which we can have an exhibition of the brain from this, but it's also very useful scientifically. So after reconstruction, it looks something like that. It's a whole piece of brain, in this case, stained in vivo, inside the brain with different dyes, and you can get a full picture, not by reconstructing, but just looking at it, because it already has this different cell. This is restored brainbow, so you will remember now electron microscope reconstruction, and then the brainbow technology. There is another new technology I don't want to speak about. The other things that we can do today, and as I mentioned, this is relatively new, about 5 years ago, it's being heavily used now in most of the labs, including the lab in Jerusalem, is this two-photon microscope. So the two-photon microscope, this miniature microscope, is sitting on the head stage of the brain of the mouse. It shines a light, a laser beam, into the brain, where a very thin, very, very thin hole, and it can see the cells that were stained before fluorescent. So if the cell is green, you will see a red-green in the behaving animal. So now you can look what happens in the mouse brain when he learns something new. So you look at the living brain while the mouse has to move in a maze, for example, and you are looking for anatomical changes while the animal is now learning something new. This is the two-photon microscope. This is our beloved Adi Mizrahi, who came to Jerusalem because we succeeded with the help of Lili Safra and other generous donors to buy this two-photon microscope, which is not a cheap machine, but it's there in Jerusalem, it's working, and he, Adi Mizrahi, and a group of scientists using this technology can do the following. So I'm going to show you a very small piece of a brain, actually two cells, looking whether they are connecting one another or not. And I will show you that while the animal behaves, the connections moves and are created. So there are synapses being created and uncreated while you are doing something. So the message to this audience, if you don't know it yet, is while you're listening now to my talk, your brain is physically changing, and the essential, one of the changes, is this rewiring, reconnecting your brain. So if you remember something from the lectures today, you have new connections in your brain. So this is how it looks. This is an axon of one cell. This is dendrite of one cell. And look at what happens. You see they are connected now with the synapse. They are not connected now. This is after one day. The third day, they are not connected. The fourth day, they are connected. This is a behaving animal. It's now learning a maze. So while it is doing this, you can see that there is little changes. There is no additional material in our brain. It's not heavier after we learned, but it's reconnected. And this reconnected brain is coding, is memorying something new. This came about because we have a fantastic anatomy with these fluorescent dyes, but also this fantastic microscope that we can look into the behaving brain while it changes. But this is not enough, so I describe you some anatomy, but what about activity? Okay, so there is a substrate. The substrate is an anatomical substrate, but on top of it, as you saw before, there is activity, electrical activity. So our brain codes the world with its specific anatomy by some electrical activity. And I should tell you one thing that affected me a lot, and I like to repeat this one because I really, in some sense, became a neuroscientist because of this one picture. So it is in Gregory's book, very old, very, very specific, very, very important book for me. It's called Eye and Brain. In this book, there is this experiment from the 70s of the 20th century. So here there are two kittens, two cats, that are totally identical. So it's twin cats. They are born identical. They are put into this basket. One of them is passive, so he cannot move, but passively. The other twin is the active one because the legs are outside and he can move. So all the whole system moves, rotates, because this one cat moves. So when this one cat moves, the other twin cat is passively moved by him. So one is the active cat, the other one is the passive cat. You do this kind of an experiment about 2 or 3 hours a day. So in light, while there is light, they are in this condition, then you put them in dark to play, to eat, to sleep, and so forth. Only 2 hours a day they are in light, but whenever they are in light, they are only in this condition. They cannot go free in light. They cannot free only in dark. You do this, and to my amazement, and I think to the amazement of many of the scientists at that time, when you then take the two cats outside the basket, in light, you see the following, that this cat behaves like a normal cat, goes around, doesn't fall, doesn't hit the wall, normal cat, normal seeing cat. The other cat, which got the same visual information, because after all, he was rotated in the same room, in the same environment, it was the same visual input, but he was passive, that's the only difference between the two. This other cat remains blind all his life, if you do it 3 weeks. So there is a critical period whereby you have both to see, so to speak, or to get visual information, and also move. Only if you move and receive visual information together, you see. Otherwise, you receive visual information, but it doesn't mean behaviorally anything. So it doesn't mean that you don't have, in this case of the cat, electrical activity in the brain. The brain is normal. But the electrical activity means nothing behaviorally. It doesn't know that now you approach a wall. You have to behave yourself in order to correctly interpret the signals. What does it mean? Okay. I have 12 minutes to convince you that we are going to understand the brain. Okay. So what does it mean to interpret correctly? You see, I myself had a little problem when I was a student, because when I was a high school student, my teacher told me that I am a camera. I thought that I have a camera here, lenses, and that I have a screen here, and I really thought that this world is being projected. I was stupid then, maybe now too. So there was this picture coming in, and I thought that there is here pictures, like on a screen. So it looks like when you put people into this magnet, like you heard before, this functional MRI, and you show people, in this case, a screen of television, something moving on the television, you do see, of course, activity in the brain. So you see this kind of thing, it doesn't mean nothing. This region, suddenly you see a little thing on the screen, this other thing. So I thought really this is a projection, kind of a projection of what is there onto a screen. But of course, this is not the case. Because if this projection must mean something, so if somebody now think about something and you have electrical activities, what does it mean? If I need to read your code, if I need to read your signals, I have to know what does it mean for you. That's why I don't think we shall be able ever to read one another's code in the brain, but this is another discussion, because each one develops his own representation of the world. Your red and my red is not identical in my own brain and your brain. Anyway, so it's not a screen, it's an interpretation of the signal. So when I'm saying I'm seeing now consciously, it means that there is electrical activity here, but in order to say that it is a cat, that it is a face, that it is my hand, I have to be able to interpret these electrical signals and say that I see it. Otherwise, these are just signals without any meaning. So you have to learn to see. You have to learn to interpret the electrical activity in your brain. Okay, so we have visual input. Some of it we are aware of, because we know to interpret and we pay attention to it. But there is a lot of things that we don't see. And I wanted to show you this amazing movie in my mind. So there is this guy with a hat who is talking to this woman, explaining her something. See, this is a yellow hat. This is a blue shirt. They are talking. Look what happens. Okay, he's explaining her something. They are talking about something. This is a real-life movie. Okay, and suddenly it comes, look what happens. They change. It's not the same person, but she doesn't notice at all. So you see, again, yellow hat, blue shirt, they are talking. She, you know, thinks she talks to somebody specific, and then somebody comes. So how much of the world do we see? When you see something and I see something, do we see the same thing? What part of the world are we aware of? Extremely little. I can tell you that most of the things that happen in this room now disappears your consciousness. It is there somewhere, but only very little is conscious. Probably what I'm saying now, maybe, hopefully, if you're aware, is conscious. Okay, so our brain is mostly unconscious, and we have to understand that part of the brain. I think the more difficult thing is the unconscious part rather than the conscious part, but that's another thing. Because I have this watch, walking clock, I want to also mention something that you heard, but there are new inventions here. So the other technologies to record brain activity is not imaging technology, like the functional MRI, which shows actually flow of blood into the active region, but direct electrical recordings of the brain. This is one of our professors at the center, Elon Vaadia, who is recording from multi-units the brain activity, and each one of the cell is doing something like this. So this is electrical activity of this cell, another cell will do another electrical activity. So this is the code. When you see something, the region here of your visual system is firing electrical activity, and you have to interpret this electrical activity. It's a symphony of electrical activity, which codes for a face or for something else. What do we do with this information? You record from a piece of a brain that is responsible for movement. You record from many, many, many electrodes together, not only one, not only two, but now you can do 200 or 300 simultaneously. And then you want to do what we are trying to do several years all over the world, actually, but there are new inventions recently. So you record from this group of cells that typically activates your arm, but now we are going to use this electrical activity to activate robotic arm. This is a new movie taken a few days ago from a lab in America. It's a group of people working with Elon Vaadia. Elon Vaadia did, about 2 days ago, another thing that I will mention. So this is a monkey sitting here. This is the robotic arm outside of his body. The electrical activity is recorded from the brain of the monkey, and he wants to move his hand because he's hungry, but his hand is tied. He cannot move his own hand. So, but he still wants, intend to eat. So he generates this electrical activity. We can take this electrical activity, and you can see there is some cucumber here or some banana here. He wants the banana. He generates electrical activity in the brain, and he can move this into his mouth. So we can use now, because we understand some of the code in the brain, to activate directly from the brain robotic arm. Elon Vaadia a few days ago told me that he already succeeded not only to do this to the monkey, but also to rotate. So you can use the same group of cells both to move the hand, to grasp, and to rotate with 200 neurons. It's quite amazing. So this is another way to approach electrical activity or understanding of brain activity is by this. I just am very proud to tell you, I'll do it very fast because of time limitation, I'll tell you very fast that Samsung approached us 2 months or 3 months ago, Samsung company, they heard about this thing, and what we want to do is with them to develop microchips, and I hope that eventually we shall have like a little dust that we can swallow, it will go into our brain, this dust will be sensitive to electrical activity, it will radiate telemetrically outside from the brain, and then we can read what is happening in the brain. And the idea is to help people with spinal cord injury, that the brain is still functioning, it can generate the intention, but we don't know to read it. And I'm hoping not to be invasive, because today the monkey is invasive. You are putting electrode into his brain. I would like to be able to record the electrical activity of single cells telemetrically, and Samsung, hopefully, will help us. So I think it's an amazing development, the capability to record individual cells, both optically today, and this is an optical recording of individual cells with two-photon microscope in the visual system. You can see a group of cells highlighted optically, one cell by other cell. It's a new technology that allows you to record optically the activity of neurons in the brain. So as I'm trying to tell you that we are really approaching very fast a huge new understanding of this brain. But I want to emphasize, and I will end by this, I think, to emphasize the importance of modeling. Because Ezra Marcus, himself, sitting there, asked me a very good question, really. You have anatomy, you have physiology, so what is missing? In some sense, you know a lot about the brain. What do you need more? It's a very good question. What do you need more? I'm saying that you cannot say that I understand anything, especially not a computing machine like ours, of some sort, without modeling it. It's like taking a computer, my own computer, giving it to somebody from the Mars, asking him, please explain me what does this computer is doing. So he will open it, he will see all the wires, so he will see the anatomy of my computer. He will also activate the keyboard, and he will see some chips turning from 0 to 1 or from 1 to 0. Okay, so he will scrub the anatomy of my computer, he will describe the physiology of my computer, but does he understand my computer? No, because he doesn't have the mathematical model that help us to build this computer, which is Boolean algebra, which is summing 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1 stands for A, and 0, 0, 2, 2, 2 stands for B. It's not understanding without understanding the code, the mathematical code of this machine. That's exactly what we need. So, and there are two ways to do it. One way is called, yes, it says 5 minutes, so I have a watch here. So there is a simulation of the brain, and that's what Rodin did in his kiss. He simulated the kiss. You replicate a kiss, not by people kissing, but in this case, by sculpture kissing. This is what I call simulation. And that's what I'm going to show you. That's what my group is doing, a simulation of a whole piece of a brain to try to understand the whole piece of a brain, the full kiss. What Chaim Sompolinsky is doing, and Chaim today is the greatest neurophysicist in the world by far, the greatest neurophysicist in the world, because what he's trying to do is to capture the essence, like Brancusi did when he captured the essence of the keys. Because when I will say that I understand the whole brain, it's not a replica of the brain. It's the understanding of the principles of the brain that allows it to behave as it is. So the physicists who came to the field, Chaim Sompolinsky I mentioned, but there are others like Hopfield and other people all over the world, physicists, are trying to build a more abstract understanding of the machine. So Brancusi is the more abstract understanding of the keys, is the essence, the minimal thing you need in order to say this is a keys, and Rodin is the simulation of the keys. Okay, so I'm jumping a little bit, because this man is very important for us, Lord Canvey, who said, I can never say that I understand anything without having a mathematical model of it. We are convinced that he was right. We are in our lab building mathematical models of individual nerve cells, and each nerve cell has just generation of specific instrument, electrical instrument. So this one cell knows to fire like this. And we are trying to now model each one of these cells individually, and we succeeded. Now we have mathematical models of most of the electrical behaviors, repertoire of firing. So this is our model. This is the real cell. We can now model individual cells electrically in a mathematical model and replicate the microchip behavior of this electrical activity. And eventually, and that's what we are doing today, we are replicating the whole piece of a brain in the computer by simulation, and that's what we call the Blue Brain Project. This is done with Henry Markram in Lausanne, with Bert Sackmann, Nobel laureate in Heidelberg, Kevin Martin in Zurich and others. We are trying to replicate the whole piece of a brain cell by cell. Each one is modeled mathematically, as you saw before, firing electrically, and this is what we do. Time is done. Okay, so we are putting, I'm done. We are putting cell by cell into the computer. The computer is the Blue Gene computer in Lausanne. It has 10,000 processors. Each processor simulates one cell. So we can really model mathematically and connect 10,000 cells with about billion synapses. So we are today capable of connecting 1 billion synapses within a realistic network, piece of a brain, it's called the cortical column. This is the type of simulations we can get. In this case, a simulation of 10,000 cells of a autistic mice. We are trying now to compare a piece of a brain of a autistic mouse compared to a normal mouse and see what kind of connectivity, local problems, exist in this mouse compared to the other mouse, hoping that we shall get some principle out of this autistic mouse and then understand better this autism. So we are now at the level of trying to understand the whole piece of a brain, and our ambition, and we should be ambitious as scientists and also perfect as scientists, is to build from the brain of a rat, which we can almost do today, into the brain of a human, complete simulation of a whole piece of a brain. And you can ask me the question during the talk, is this brain that you are going to simulate going to be conscious of itself? Am I building now a machine? Because it's a replica of our brain, will it become conscious? Will it come to lecture here? Will it go to lunch with you? Thank you very much.
You're listening to Eden Segev, who was talking about the future of brain research touching the mysterious. Eden Segev was doing this conference during the third symposium on brain research organized by Ziafian. We remind you that Eden Segev is the head of the Interdisciplinary Center for Neural Computation in Jerusalem in the famous Hebrew University of Jerusalem. You can find the other broadcasts having to do with the Symposium on Brain Research on our website. Thanks for listening to us.